Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul. BlakeRadio.com.
All day, all night, all the time. BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul.
Welcome to Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley on the Blake Radio Network. On each and every show, Doc takes you inside the world of sports to hear from the movers, shakers, and decision makers. Now, I know you thought there were seven wonders of the universe, where here's the eighth, Doc Stanley.
Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network. Rainbow Soul is the channel. Sports in Depth is the show. As always, John Coltrane, dear Lord, how cute. Open up with a prayer. Dear Lord, we thank you for another day. We thank you for the little things we so largely take for granted. Thank you for blessings unseen, all unmerited, and all by your grace and mercy. We ask you, the Lord, not to give us what we want, but what we need. We thank you for all things. In the name of your darling son, Jesus. Amen. Doc Stanley, amen. Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Souls, the channel. Sports in Depth is the show, and a half hour here of the sweet science. And Lady A has got us a special guest today. And Lady A, who is he?
This is Chuck Williams. I have him calling in, Doc. I don't know if he's in the queue yet. But
I think that's Mr. Williams doing this now. Am I correct?
Yeah.
Mr. Williams?
Chuck. I'm a New Yorker. Of course I'm prompt.
Yay, Chuck, what's going on?
How you guys doing? And I also say aloha, because I'm a New Yorker that lives in Hawaii, but I'm still a New Yorker.
Oh, Chuck, thank you so much for calling into the show, yeah. Chuck.
No problem, Adrian, it's my pleasure.
Once you live in New York, you can live anywhere. Also have the Hoopster, who's going to talk a little basketball down the line, and also our own Mel Smith, Jr., Rooney, and Hoopster. Thanks a lot for joining us. Chuck, thanks
thank
a lot
you.
For being with us.
Hey, what is the host's name, by the way?
Doc
Well, that's Doc Stanley. That's Doc. He's a doctor.
Right.
Doc Stanley.
Doc. Hey, listen. I was with. I don't know if you guys know the name Jack Powers, the former coach of Manhattan and the former athletic director, and he played at Manhattan.
Oh, Manhattan College.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
And I used to play schoolyard basketball with Jack Powers and Donnie Walsh, who's the president of the Knicks.
Donnie Walsh.
Back in the day, as we say.
You know, I have a buddy of mine, Steve Glazer, Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Souls. His channel, Sports in Depth, is the show. Mr. Williams is our special guest here. And it's solid. I have a friend of mine, Steve Glazer. He's in Brazil. We're sitting in Brazil in Fortaleza. And he says, Doc, I got to tell you a story that you being from Brooklyn, I think you can relate to. He says, you know, it's a school day, and we see this limousine roll up, and two guys get out, and they come to play a little playing stickball in the yard. And this one guy, left-handed guy, he's telling me how to throw a curveball, and his blonde-headed friend is talking about hitting. And they get in the car and they left, and they said it was Mickey Mantle and Whitey.
And Willie Mays.
No, Willie Mays wasn't there. There's only two guys.
Right.
Well, the winner is left-handed pitcher in the history of baseball. And at one time, the most home runs hit by a switch hitter in history of baseball, I believe, supplanted by Eddie Murray. Chuck, you're here. The duties now. Give us your title again.
I beg your pardon?
Your titles.
Well, I'm with the World Boxing Council, and I used to judge world championship fights, and I now supervise world championship fights. In fact, I was the supervisor for the Paul Williams Martinez fight.
Well, the first one or the second one?
The one of the greatest knockouts in the history of the sport, frankly.
The second one.
Paul was out before he hit the canvas.
And you know something, Chuck? And he was there with his eyes open. That great line from the movie, eyes wide shut. His eyes were wide open. And he was knocked out.
Absolutely.
Chuck, I want to ask you a quick question for the viewers. We had a brief conversation prior to you calling in on the show. With what's going on now, it seems like these judges have been indefinitely suspended. Is that the current course of action usually that takes place with something like this, or the controversy?
Hold on, Lady A. Let's back up on that. You're talking about the judges. Let us know, the viewers. You're talking about the judges from the past week's fight, Paul Williams, Atlantic City?
Correct.
Okay, that's the judges we're talking about. Okay.
Well, you're a step ahead of me because I didn't know they were suspended, though. I did share with you that the current commissioner in New Jersey,
Aaron Davis,
is a fantastic guy. I've worked with him twice now on world championship fights. He's among the best in the country, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't aware that that was done. I was aware that there was a statement on the Internet that he was going to have the judges in to discuss their work that night.
Mm-hmm. Well, Chuck, I was able to actually download after our conversation today one of the something that was issued by the state of New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, and it was sent out to Dan Goosen and I don't who is with Goosen Tudor and
right.
David Itzkowicz. Is that how you properly pronounce
David,
the name? I'm not sure.
David Itzkowicz, correct.
Right, from Golden Boy, and it stated
right.
in the document that I downloaded, which I was able to pull from Fight News. It says that in regards to the Lara Williams fight, the New Jersey State Athletic Control Board, I'll just read it to you ad verbatim, was responsible for assigning all three judges who scored this contest and decided the outcome. At the conclusion mm-hmm. of the contest, this agency had concerns about the final scores. Due to these concerns, we decided to conduct a full review of the scoring. As a part of this review, the New Jersey State Athletic Control Board called in all three judges to our Trenton offices and conducted a full analysis of the scoring of each round. Please be advised that this agency has now completed its review of the scoring in the above-named contest, which is Lara versus Williams. The New Jersey State Athletic Control Board has not found any evidence of bias, fraud, corruption, or incapacity on the part of any of the judges. However, we remain unsatisfied with the scoring of the contest, even after hearing the explanation from the judges.
Let me cut in here. First of all, I want to congratulate you once again for Sports in Depth, once again breaking to the world something ahead of everybody else. There's two things here. You're saying, okay, they did a great job, or they went by the guidelines, but now you're not happy with the results.
How many times has this happened in boxing?
Let me clear that up for a moment, okay?
Go ahead, Chuck. Go ahead, Chuck.
I'll tell you what it really is, and this is what I feel. And I tell people all the time. I have judged all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
Have there been officials that have taken bribes? Absolutely. There's no question about it. However. That's the rare occurrence. Have I been offered bribes? Absolutely. There's not enough money in the world for me to be bribed to do a job that I do because I have a passion for the sport and I respect the sport. Now, having said that, one judge had two even rounds in that fight. That, in today's boxing, that's almost unheard of.
Yeah, that's Al Bennett. I don't know what his background is.
I don't think I've had four even rounds in my entire career
of
judging. Are there even rounds? Absolutely there are even rounds. It's like, you know, we say in our seminars, if you don't know who won the round after the round's over, you can't just pick a guy and give it to him. You have these guys' future earnings in your hand and in that pencil. And if you give a wrong score to a guy, you can affect, his future income.
Career.
So these
are
three jobs. Here's what I told Adrian. I said, look. These are three judges. I know most of the people in the sport.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in the sport a very long time, and I've never heard of these three judges. Now, all that means is they are not high profile. They haven't done world championship fights. I'm not saying that a couple of them haven't done some world championship fights, but I almost would guarantee the guy with two even rounds hasn't.
Yeah,
and what the New Jersey Commission was saying was this. There wasn't bias or cheating or anything like that, but we have to re-educate these judges. That's how I'm reading between the lines.
Right, right. But Hank, let me ask you this. I mean, what criteria do they have to fulfill in order to be able to judge championship
fights?
I mean, because I don't. I mean, obviously, if I read out the names, if I read out the names to you, you're not gonna.
Lady A, back up. First of all, this wasn't a championship fight.
Yeah, I was about to say that.
And who's saying?
Right, but we were just talking about.
Okay, no, but fine. But okay, first of all, because Doc Stanley Sports Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul is the channel. Sports in Depth is the show on Rainbow Soul. I guess is the famed man from the WBC, which was, if I'm correct, the WBC was the only sanctioning body that didn't strip Ali during that time. Am I correct about that, Chuck?
You're ahead of me, my friend, because I really don't know that.
WBC was the only one.
But the WBC, because you mentioned that, the WBC has been the innovator of many things in boxing, led by Jose Suleiman, the president. And, you know, he takes a lot of heat from the media and so forth. But let's just talk about just a real couple of quick things. He brought the 15 rounds down to 12. There's still people today that think that's not right. However, there would be a lot of guys that would be walking on their heels and hardly able to talk if those three rounds. Just think of Corrales and Castillo and fights like that. If they had to go another three rounds in those fights. Also, the weigh-in the day before. The Pennsylvania Commission, for one, doesn't agree with that. But, you know, before a fight, guys were concerned about making the weight the next day and couldn't sleep that night. And it also didn't give a chance to rehydrate when they weighed in the day of the fight. So there's a lot of stuff that goes on. But we should stay on the subject of judging. It's not just the championship fights. I don't care if it's a four-round fight leading to a six-round fight leading to an eight-round fight, then eventually the guy becomes a championship fighter. Every fight should be judged like it's a championship fight because this is a guy's career. This is how he feeds his family. And can I just give you a couple of quick things that I made notes on? The most important thing for a judge sitting in that chair, and there's no better seat in the arena than that raised chair at ringside. Not only do you see where the punch is scored, but you see the power of the punch. You can't see that from the first row of seats in the audience.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So concentration is the single most important thing. And it's very difficult to totally concentrate for 3 minutes. Try it sometime.
Mm-hmm.
Your mind will wander. But you got to. Mm-hmm. When I talk to guys, I tell you, you got to bring your mind right back.
Mm-hmm.
Quality over quantity. Just because you see a guy throwing 100 punches a round doesn't mean he won that round.
Mm-hmm.
If the other guy threw five punches and staggered him, and he's just throwing pity-pat punches, the guy with the five punches wins that round.
Okay, I'm glad you said that, because Doc and I have had this conversation ad infinitum, okay, about how they're doing the scoring. Now, obviously, Doc and I had a conversation yesterday about CompuBox, and the judges they're not privy to what comes up in the CompuBox stats. You know,
that we as fans would see on TV.
You know what I'm saying?
I got to correct one thing. Let me tell you one thing. And I love the guys who do CompuBox, and they're friends of mine. I compliment them all the time. They found a need. They filled it, and, you know, so forth. However, there's nothing between a jab and a power punch when it comes to punch count.
Right.
That's all they can do, jabs and power punches, and there is something in between.
Right.
And they agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's talk about the two-point round.
Right.
It used to be that you could only give 2 points if there was a knockdown.
Right.
All right. Now today, and when I, as a supervisor, one of my duties is to meet with the referee and three judges to make sure we're all on the same page on this fight.
Right.
And one of the things I tell the judges, because many times I'm with judges, some of them I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I said, guys, don't be afraid to use a two-point round without a knockdown.
Right.
If the guy's done everything but knock the guy down, and the other guy's only scored three punches, it's a 10-8 round.
Correct.
But you're the determiner of that.
But now, Chuck, that's a great point. Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul, the channel. Sports in Depth is the show. Lady A has more to say, and she's brought Mr. Chuck Williams, a supervisor, judge, and one of the illustrious people in the business from the WBC, which was a very close friend always with DK, Don King. And we're talking boxing. And Chuck, before we go...
All right, Doc, one last point on that list.
Go ahead.
As judges, you must forget the name. Forget the name. Williams was the big name in that fight. And I'm sorry, but I believe that might have influenced a couple of these... judges and the rounds that they gave him. He was the name in that fight.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to forget that because it's not fair to the other guy.
Right.
And look, there's no question that Williams lost that fight. There is absolutely no question whatsoever. And there are a lot of fights that people complain about. Look, 90% of the fights, any jamoke in the street can get the right winner. That 10% or 7% or whatever it is, where it's a real toss-up, that hopefully we as professionals see the finite things that we're looking for that make the difference in the fight.
So, Chuck, before we go any further, I thought we would pull up. Let's get some background. How long you been in? How you got started? When did you make your move to Hawaii? What got you into boxing and into the venue that you're in now?
Well, I started way back many years ago when I was in an orphanage here in New York in Staten Island until the age of 14. And that's what I had the same guy beat me almost every day for a year. He was Pernell Whitaker before Pernell Whitaker was ever even thought of at the age of 10. I couldn't hit this guy until the priest who ran the orphanage, who was from Hell's Kitchen, Father Connolly, asked me if I thought I could beat him. His name was Hector Taylor. He was a black Puerto Rican kid. I think so, Father. So he showed me how to tuck in my elbows and throw three jabs and with a right cross to follow. So, and then we used to sit before television and listen to Don Duffy describe what Sugar Ray Robinson and Carmen Basilio were doing in the ring. And we would conjure up in our minds what was going on, and we would try that the next day. But how I started to get involved as an official is I was in Honolulu watching Andy Gannigan and some of the guys. And he's the guy that knocked down Arguello, by the way, when they first fought. And Alexis told me that the hardest punch he ever took was from Andy Gannigan.
Wow.
But he knocked out Gannigan in the fifth round. But in any event, so I was with some buddies, and I saw all the activity down around ringside, and I said, wow, that looks interesting. So I started started judging the amateurs. And then I started going to the Olympic Training Center and doing the national tournaments. I went as far as the Olympic trials as a referee and judge, and then I started doing the pros. So, you know, the problem is that we don't have consistency not only across our nation but around the world. You asked how are judges picked and how are they qualified and all that kind of thing. Well, it changes with every commission.
Right.
Some commissions have a test, and what they do is they make I think Nevada makes it. There's an FBI agent that recently was certified as a judge in Nevada, and I think for a year he shadow judged. In other words, he sat there and did scorecards, and then they give them to the commissioner, and he would evaluate them.
Hmm.
And that's the best way. You know, you have to have new judges moved up the ladder because guys get older and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it should be more than one, what we considered a new judge on a big fight. It should have at least two experienced judges and a judge that, you know, is moving up the ladder.
So do you feel, Chuck, do you feel that due to this happening with this fight, maybe they'll consider what you just said, like consider having more experienced judges?
Well, that's the responsibility of each commissioner.
Okay.
And as I said, I didn't know the name of any one of these three guys, but there could be a guy that has 10 years of experience among those names. I don't know.
No, I mean,
I
have the
them.
Names here. I don't know if they would sound familiar. It was Al Bennett, Hilton Whitaker, and Don Givens. Now, Al Bennett was the gentleman that you said had the draw at 114-114 was Al Bennett.
Well, who had the two even rounds?
That was it, Al Bennett. Yeah,
yeah.
114-114.
That's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And because you should be able to find something that a guy, you know, won the fight. Now,
right.
For instance, I'll give you an example of this. What if a guy is chasing a guy down all over the ring and hasn't landed one punch at the end of the round? A lot of guys might score that 10-10. That's a 10-9 round because Boxer A tried to make the fight. He kept chasing the guy. He's throwing punches.
Right.
And so in my scorecard, he's getting a 10-9 round on that round.
Okay.
He at least tried to make the fight.
Right.
And we've seen guys in there trying to survive.
Right.
And by not fighting.
Mm-hmm.
So the most recent one was Klitschko and Hay in
Correct.
Over in London.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And he ran around. I mean, it looked like he was trying to get angles, just at the other, but he really didn't do much.
I mean, no, but and the sad part about it is a few times that he did land a punch, it was pretty effective. So if I'm in this corner, I say, look, you son of a gun, if you got to be carried out on a stretcher, so be it.
Mm-hmm,
but this is how you earn your living. You chose to earn your living this way. You go out there and attack that guy.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the only chance you have. When these guys would fight Mike Tyson, these big guys like Frank Bruno from London. I was in his dressing room before the fight. I said, not as an official. I was just there. Somebody introduced us. And I said, the only chance you have is to back him up. Tyson's power comes forward, as most people do. You got to back him up. And guess who the first guy was that backed him up? Evander Holyfield. And we know what happened there.
Yeah, you know, the thing about Evander, too, Doc Stanley Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul is the channel, Sports in Depth is the show, Lady A, and our special guest, Mr. Chuck Williams. Evander had always felt he could beat Mike as they had fought in the amateurs, so he always felt that
he had
Mike's
didn't. In all due respect, Doc, they didn't fight in the amateurs. That was Evander, as you know, was he was a light heavyweight in the amateurs.
Mm-hmm.
They sparred. Now there was another incident though where Evander I think backed down Tyson in an incident in a pool room in the Olympic Training Center. And so frankly, if I was a betting man, I was in line to make a bet. I'll tell you the story. I was in the line. I was three people from the window. I had my hand on $5,000. It was 12-1. I would have made $60,000. I knew, as much as you can know, that Evander was going to win that fight. I'm now two people from the window. And the little guy on my shoulder who keeps me straight said, you can't do this. I said, shut up. He said, you can't. Because some people know me in the sport. So I got out of line and didn't make the bet. So a friend of mine said, well, why don't you get somebody to make the bet for you? Because I said, that's one too many that know. And it's a thing called ethics.
Right.
If somebody knows I made a big bet on Tyson and Holyfield, and I'm judging Oscar De La Hoya in a fight, let's say a month later, somebody would say, you see that guy in that chair? I saw him put a big fight on Tyson and Holyfield. I wonder how much he's got on this one.
Right.
How devastating
would
that be?
Just a hint of impropriety on your part could...
No, it would be unethical. Dishonest.
Right.
So you
totally
think they would have labeled you like they labeled Pete Rose? Just to see
what I hope they would do, had I made that bet, is throw me out of the sport.
Wow.
That's what I would hope they would do. And
you
I'm talking
what?
About
that,
me
that,
now,
that,
okay?
That says a lot about your credibility. And, wow.
Hold on. You know how I explain that, Doc?
How you doing,
I say, I have guys who come up to me, because I'm a New York aggressive guy. And say, you know, when I first met you, I didn't like you, but geez, you're a hell of a guy. I said, you know, you should have waited a little bit, because when I look in the mirror in the morning, I like that guy because I know who he is. Live your life well. You don't have to worry about what anybody says about you.
Hey, that's the man in the mirror and along the man upstairs. And if nobody make a move, let's do a small break, and then we're going to come back to Chuck, and then we'll have some questions from the panel. Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network.
Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
All day, all night, all the time. BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul.
Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network. Rainbow Soul is the channel. Sports in Depth is the show. We got about another 6 minutes here, but we're going to jump into it as we always
do.
Hey,
Doc, before you do, let me say one thing, please.
Go ahead. Say it.
I met Adrian and Cedric up at the Boxing Hall of Fame a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to tell you something. These are two people that are like kids in a candy store up there. I mean, I've been there 13 straight years from Hawaii to Canastota, New York. And it just gives me a warm feeling when I see folks like these two who go up there and they're just in hog heaven. I mean, to be around all these people and everything.
Yeah, she loves the game. I remember because when the... I was one of the original voters that inducted people into the Hall of Fame. And then when I left the Boxing Writers of America, Ed Brophy told me that they don't use anybody that's not a member of the Boxing Writers anymore, which I found kind of, crazy. I think a lot of credibility, a lot of validity of the Boxing Hall of Fame went out the window when you put a guy like Sylvester Stallone in and you can't find a place in there for a guy like Art Rush Jr. and Harold Weston guys.
Well, I'll give you another one that should be in there. His name is Bobby Lee from Hawaii, not to be confused with the New Jersey guy now. Bobby Lee from Hawaii, who was a former president of the WBA and a lifetime vice president of WBC, and he was with the Hawaii Boxing Commission for 60 years. He's 90 years old. I have lunch with him every Tuesday when I'm home, and he still drives, 90 years old.
Wow.
Bobby Lee was the guy who refused to license Muhammad Ali at the very, very end, if you'll remember it, and he had a guy by the name of Smith, who was trying to get him licensed, the guy who robbed the armored car in California and went to prison, $23 million.
Yeah,
and he said
wow.
to Bobby Lee when he wouldn't do it, he says, I'm going to tell you something, I got $23 million and I'm going to destroy you. Well, he ended
didn't
up
work
in
out that way. Didn't work out that way. Wow. What major fights have you officiated, Chuck?
Well, I've done a number of De La Hoya fights. I've done Tyson. You name it, and I've pretty much done them. More importantly, are the fights that I've done in the amateurs, because I get to know these guys at that time. Like Zab Judah, I refereed Zab Judah in the National Golden Gloves in an Olympic year. Didn't know him. Took a point away from him in the last round. He lost the fight by 1 point. In a National Golden Glove tournament in Olympic year. Now, today, Zab sees me, walks up and gives me a hug. In fact, from here, I'm going to Vegas for the Zab Judah Amir Khan fight.
Oh, you are?
Saturday.
You going to that, Chuck? I'm
going
to call
be
you.
At, I'll, mm-hmm. I'll be at that fight.
Mm-hmm.
You can hear the excitement in Adrian's voice. Are you going to that fight, Chuck? Hey, Chuck, do you need a backup referee or judge?
Hey, I tell you, she's like a kid in a candy store.
Man. And you know what? And when she comes out, she eats so much candy, she has no teeth left.
Oh,
so I
God.
What's that for the break? Gang, what we're going to do. Hold on, Cedric. What we're going to do. Cedric, calm down. Calm down. Right? Here's the other kid. Here's our kid, too. You know,
what's he saying?
You know, Mary and Jane. Gang, hold on. We're going to do our closing here and come back with the mic on and lights off. Larry Hardy is going to take us out of here. Live your life today. As if you have to stand before God tomorrow. Life's most persistent and most urgent question is, what are you doing for others? Service to others is rent you pay for your space on earth. That is Muhammad Ali. The one before that was Dr. Martin Luther King. Doc Stanley says, trust in God. Larry Hardesty.
This concludes another edition of Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. We thank you for listening and encouraging you to tell a friend about Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. You can hear that and many other great programs on the Blake Radio Network. Have a great day.
Well, we're going to do what we always do. We're going to come back. There you go. We're going to close out with Dear Lord, John Coltrane. And we want to thank everybody for being with us.
Hang
back.
Finished
with us.
Already?
No. Just stay on.
Back.
Stay on.
All right.
Yeah, a half hour is gone, but we have gone beyond that. So hold tight. We'll be right back. Doc Stanley, Sports and Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Solar Channel, Sports and Depth is the show. And we're going to go now to Sports and Depth with the light up and the mic on. And Mr. Hardesty, you can come on back in.
Welcome to Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley on the Blake Radio Network. On each and every show, Doc takes you inside the world of sports to hear from the movers, shakers, and decision makers. I know you thought there were seven wonders of the universe, where here's the eighth, Doc Stanley.
And as always, opening, John Coltrane, who was discovered by Miles Davis, considered by many to be the greatest tenor saxophone player of all time. Dear Lord, our opening theme and our prayer. Dear Lord, thank you for all good and wonderful things. Thank you for the little things God takes for granted. And more importantly, thank you for your darling son Jesus that died on the cross, that we may have the right to the tree of life. In Jesus' name, the Lord. Amen. Fox Stanley, Sports in Depth. Okay, we're back. And now we got the panel get a shot at Chuck here. It's Sports in Depth with the mic on, lights off. And we've got Sea Wings. We should have Mel Smith Jr. I got the Hoopster here. Cedric, you talked about that because you and Adrian had constantly talking. We met this guy, Chuck Dave, boom, boom. I didn't know because Cedric is a big football guy. I mean, he knows his football. I mean, him and Coach Ryan here, they're like buddies, you know what I mean? But you talked about Chuck. Talk about the meeting when you first met Chuck there, Cedric.
Oh, I mean, when we first met him, you could see gentleman. You could look that up in the dictionary, and it would say see Chuck. Very accommodating, down to earth. He's a gentleman's gentleman. And it was just a pleasure to see him again the second year that we went up there. It made the trip all the worthwhile to hang out and talk to Chuck and meet different people that he introduced us to. I mean, it was like we were residents of the town up there in Canastota.
Yeah, and you know, just to add to that too, Chuck, there was a time when they had – Chuck, what do they call that, like the lecture portion, I guess, of the Hall of Fame?
Over at the ring, right?
Yeah, and there was one time actually where Jesse James Leha had come out and he was on the stage and you know, I was trying to get, you know, the moderator's attention and Chuck waved to him, you know, for me and Cedric and I were able to ask a few actually very, very good questions on his responses because we had asked him about Gotti and due to the fact that he had fought Gotti, what his opinion was with everything and how he felt and after he had found out about Gotti's passing. But I tell you, the whole time Cedric and I were up there, it was really amazing because we were actually, when Cedric and I originally went to the Hall of Fame, we went for a weekend last year.
Mm-hmm.
And we had bumped into Chuck and we had bumped into one of the women that does the raffles. Her name is Diana Armstrong. She kind of does all the raffles and everything. And, you know, and they were like, oh, yeah, you know, come back next year because it's 4 days. You guys are just up for the weekend. You'll enjoy it even more. And let me tell you, it's probably the best thing Cedric and I did. You know, we met Chuck again. He remembered us from last year. And
it's not hard to remember two grown-ups with no teeth.
Yeah, I guess we were like kids at a candy store.
Yeah,
I mean,
you
got to
stand out in the crowd.
Hey, Doc, I want to make an announcement on your show right now.
Sure.
Because these two folks, the dinner this year was sold out, and I saw them the day of the dinner. In fact, I was about to go through the throughway and did a U-turn and caught up to them before they crossed the street. And I said, you're going to dinner. They didn't have tickets. Well, you're going to be my guest at the dinner next year. The two of you.
Really? Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Thanks a lot,
wow.
Chuck.
I'm making that commitment to you on the radio here. So
wow.
Don't book yourself out until, in fact, you weren't
now,
even
now,
able to
now I won't be able to
Sunday
sleep
till
next year. I won't be able to sleep till next year. I'll just be thinking about going over to the dinner now.
Listen, Chuck, right now, they're probably going to be up there next Friday camping out waiting for next year.
Hey, Doc, and that's dinner, $500 a plate, man. That's a $500 a plate dinner.
Wow.
And I know the Hoops is upset. No, he's like, yeah,
I'm upset. I'm good. They deserve it, though. I've been in so many, so I can't count.
Yeah. No, just thank you so
that's
much, Chuck. I really appreciate
thank
that.
Thank you, Chuck. And before we go on, I'd just like to offer my condolences to the Klitschko brothers on the passing of their father after this long battle with cancer.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, Bowie Fischer's family also. I mean, because Bowie Fischer passed away last week, and
we've had a lot. Unfortunately, we've had too many in the last couple of years. Some of our really great people. And
your family's another
name.
Hey, Doc,
if you haven't had him on, you ought to try to get JB on. You know the who's he with now? Well, he's done HBO work and he's on the football on Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
JB Brown.
Mm-hmm.
James Brown.
I tell you what you do. You give Lady A a phone number and we'll get him.
Yeah.
All right.
Definitely.
Let me check with him because he's become a good friend. In fact, sometimes I text him. And he texts me back. I don't know if he does it on breaks during the football deal that he does, you know, the pregame.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. During his telecast, I get texts back.
Now, how long have you been in Hawaii, Chuck?
I'm sad to say 35 years.
Sad to say?
Well, I'm a New York guy.
Hawaii is beautiful. So we hear. We hear about Hawaii.
You know, let me tell you, I travel all over the world extensively. And this is a lesson for people. People ask me, Chuck, what's your favorite place in the world? And I tell them wherever I wake up in the morning. I don't care if it's Istanbul, the Bronx, Honolulu. That's my favorite place in the world.
Mm-hmm.
How would you wake up in the morning? I like
that. That's deep. That's deep.
That's real good.
Hey, Chuck,
can I ask you a question? Do you think that with all of the different divisions in basketball, the WBA, WBC, do you think it should be just one champion of the world instead of champions of the different divisions?
Yeah, I think that it would be great. And I've had this argument with Suleiman, and I don't mind mentioning it on the radio, that the most important committee we have of any of the sanctioning bodies is the ratings committee.
Mm-hmm.
And every single fighter, let's take Bernard Hopkins as an example. Every single fighter should be rated where he belongs. Now, let's say that he's the WBA champion. Well, he doesn't show up in the top 10 of our ratings. That's the same of all of the sanctioning bodies. And I said, we should rate everybody where he belongs and don't even mention the other belts in our ratings.
Mm-hmm.
Now, then if we offer him a fight to fight our champion and he turns it down, now we hold a press conference and say we offered, I don't want to use a fighter's name, Mr. Fighter to fight the champion for the WBC belt, and he's refused. So as a result of that, we're taking him out of the ratings.
Mm-hmm.
And should he decide at some point in time down the road that he wants to fight for our belt, then we'll put him back in the ratings where he belongs at that time. So he might have been number one when he refused to fight. He may, when he comes back, be rated number seven.
Mm-hmm.
Not because he turned us down, but just because guys have gone ahead of him.
Yeah,
and
that's
the way it should be.
You in boxing, are there guys that stand out, your favorites, for any particular reason, Chuck?
Well, this is another thing. So you go through periods of life. For instance, a lot of the young guys, say 40 and below, Muhammad Ali, and I know him personally, he actually drew me a picture on an airplane we were both on from Frankfurt to Chicago and then personalized it to me, to Chuck Muhammad Ali. But anyway, that he's the greatest of all time. Well, he's not the greatest of all time. He's not even the greatest heavyweight of all time. The greatest of all time who ever climbed between the ropes, in my opinion, is Sugar Ray Robinson. Sugar Ray Robinson had it all.
Well, Chuck, the consensus, I'm talking about Bill Gallo, I'm talking about Art Rush Jr., the consensus of all the people who have a handle on this game is that Sugar Ray Robinson is pound for pound the greatest fighter that ever lived. I mean,
absolutely.
He was 132-2 and retired the first time, 77-0 as the welterweight champ of the world when he finally got a title shot. Was 91-0 before he lost, you know. And he was Ali's idol. I mean, a lot of people don't know that Ali came to New York to ask Ray to manage him. And Ray said, you know, he was still fighting, and that's how Drew Boudini Brown got into the Ali camp, because Ray said, you know what? I can't do it, but I'm going to send some of my guys to work with you. I think the consensus is pound for pound, Ray Robinson is the best. But I don't see any heavyweight that was better than Ali. If you
Joe
do
Lewis
Ali,
would have knocked him out. Joe Lewis would have knocked Ali out.
Chuck,
period.
In the you know, it's funny you say that. But Marion Boykin, Marion B.
We're
Boykin.
We're talking about both of them in their primes. Look at anybody else can have their opinion.
Chucky, if you got to do Ali in trilogies. And you know, Ali, for my money, was just the thing that made Ali so great is the same thing that made Jim Brown so great. These were guys that were Mack trucks with the speed and mobility of a Porsche. And I remember when Bob Foster got knocked up at Ali.
He said the speed and mobility of a Porsche.
Yeah, and they're Mack trucks. And I remember the late, great Bill Shannon talking about going into the dressing room after Ali had knocked out Bob Foster. And this was the second Ali. And Foster seemed a little dazed. And Shannon said, you know, I probably got to give you a few minutes to clear your head. He said, my head is clear. He said, but I couldn't believe a guy that big had hands that fast. And so to me, Joe was a great champion. And then some of the Art Russ and Gallo and Lenny Lewin, they'll probably lean toward Joe Lewis. But Ali's speed and size were just, I mean, if Billy Kahn could be beaten for 13 rounds, Ali could have beaten him for 15. And it's an opinion. But, I mean, there are a lot of people who see Joe as the most revered. Bill.
Ali might have traded earlier with Joe Louis more than Billy Kahn. Billy Kahn was an idiot for trying to think he could knock out Joe Louis.
Yeah,
he outboxed him for those rounds, as you said. But Ali would have, I believe, now we'll never know, but I believe he would have engaged Joe Louis more. You know, you've heard about Joe Louis's 6-inch knockout punch, haven't you?
The most devastating. I mean, not only that,
and he would hit guys and break their ribs, for God's sake.
Sure.
Oh my God.
We're also talking about his jab. He had the most devastating. Him and Sonny Liston probably had the most devastating jabs. Doc Stanley, Sports and Death on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul Channel, Sports and Death on the show. Humans left here. I mean, a jab is basically just a field out punch.
Doc, that's the most important punch. The most important punch in boxing is the jab. It sets everything else up. But let me say one more thing about Joe Louis. You know. And by the way, if you don't know it, because the name is Chuck Williams, and they've got 14 pages or 40 pages of Williams is in the New York telephone book, and 85% of them are black. And I'm a white guy, so I'm going to make this next statement. Some of my friends tell me I have a black soul, though. But anyway, Joe Louis, I am so embarrassed as a white man in this country. The way our country treated Joe Louis, we should have forgiven that $1 million tax bill he had for what he did for World War II. It was absolutely outrageous that our government tried for his entire life until the man died. He owed taxes.
Yeah. Not only that,
and Chuck, it makes my heart cry. I'm telling you.
Well, they tell the story that they even took money. I mean, as a mother, Joe's mother was... Still had a little account for him, and they took the money out of that account. The monies that he got for the Army Relief Fund. Tommy Kimball tells the tremendous story of a Friday night at Madison Square Garden, and all of a sudden the lights go out, and everybody's wondering what's happening. And then all of a sudden the legendary Johnny Addy says, "Ladies and gentlemen, Sergeant Joe Louis." And the lights come on, and standing at attention in his sergeant uniform was Joseph Louis Barrows, and Tommy said they almost tore the garden down. He was probably the most revered of all heavyweight champions, and you're right. It's just a
sad Now let me tell you a similar story about your man Muhammad Ali. Let me rephrase that. Our man Muhammad Ali.
Mm-hmm.
My job at the Olympics in Atlanta, I was there for 33 days, was to spot celebrities in the audience and see if they would mind being introduced to the 17,000 people. It was at Georgia Tech's basketball arena.
Mm-hmm.
And the guys kept saying, Muhammad Ali's a man, but he was never there. But the finals, just before Reed knocked out the Cuban for the only gold medal we won, sure enough, he's up in the stands.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's no seats on the floor in the Olympics in any country. Everybody's in the stands. So I went up. I asked the guy running the show, "Do you want Muhammad Ali to come down?" He said, "Absolutely." So I took a security guy. I went up, and I said, "Muhammad, we want to," he knew me. And I said, "We want to bring it down on the floor." He said, no, I'm okay here." And some kid below him says, "There's six of us." I said, "Well, six of you aren't coming down." So I think we start walking. I finally convinced him to come down. I said, "You're not going to be able to enjoy it. People are going to ask for it now that they've seen you. Autographs, pictures, whatever." So he comes down. And we haven't taken 10 steps, and the chant begins. "Ali, Ali, Ali." The place was a crescendo of recognizing Muhammad Ali coming down to the floor.
Wow.
Unbelievable. You're talking about having chicken skin or chills up your spine. That was it for me.
Yeah.
Wow.
And, the stories, it was a boxing writer's dinner a few years ago, and you know how those things go. You have the happy hour and then this area where people sign autographs. So after the affair, Ali is sitting there signing autographs, and about 20 minutes, one of the guards come over and said, "Okay, champ, line's kind of long. We'll take you upstairs now." And Ali says, "I'm not leaving until everybody gets their autograph."
Wow.
And I remember another time I happened to be down at the downtown AC Club. In fact, Joe Frazier was there that night, and Rudy Rischke, former Major League Baseball player, who did a great job at that downtown AC Club. He said, "Doc, go sit at the table. There's a guy named Mahdi over there." And I met Mahdi, who at that time was Ali's right-hand man. So anytime Ali was in town, we'd get to hang out. And I remember one night, we were sitting there, and Ali was signing something, and the guy says, "Ali, champ, did you ever think about getting a stamp instead of signing everything?" Ali said, would you want a stamped autograph?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Well,
do you want to Cosell, Howard Cosell, Muhammad Ali, quick story?
Oh, yeah. Well, hold on.
All right.
Let me do a little quick hit it, and we'll come right back to it.
Go ahead.
Right back. Don't anybody move. Everything. Okay, we're going to take that break and then we'll come back. We'll check with a quick trip.
Broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world. To the world. To the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul. BlakeRadio.com.
All day, all night, all the time. BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul.
Speaking of sports, Howard Cosell. Go ahead, Chuck. Give it to Howard Cosell.
Yeah. There was a dinner many years ago when Muhammad Ali was in his prime in Washington, D.C., the Touchdown Club. 1,600 guys, no women, in tuxedos. It looked like a bunch of penguins. My friend, an attorney, happened to be the president of the Touchdown Club that year, so I was his guest. And as we're leaving, I just happened to be walked out next to Muhammad Ali. And I said, Muhammad, he looks at me, and I said, where are, because I knew he was a chaser in those days. And Cosell was the guy, introducing everybody during the dinner on the mic. So I said, where are all the women, man? He says, it's only one, Howard. And I'll tell you, and Ray Leonard was there. Ray was 16 or 17 years old, and he was presenting an award to Muhammad Ali. And the third time I saw Ray Leonard fight, I turned to my friend Barney Shankman, who was the attorney and was the attorney for the WBA, actually. Mm. And I said, damn. He goes, what? I said, that kid is the closest thing I've ever seen in the ring. He's about 15 years old at this point. Mm. He's the closest thing I've ever seen in the ring to Sugar Ray Robinson.
Wow.
And the rest speaks for itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing because the thing, when Marion Boykin talks about the first Duran-Lennox fight, and Marion Boykin had the greatest boxing show in history of sports boxing, working on boxing. I always say the B stands for Black Bodacious Brilliant Brother. And he says the reason why, when he picked his top four fighters of that era, which was Ray, Tommy, Marvin, and Duran, he said Duran was number one. He said because Duran came up two weight classes and beat, arguably, and you just said it, the second great welterweight of all time in Ray Leonard. And, he passed his prime, up two weight classes, and beat Ray Leonard. And you're
well,
right.
Duran was probably, and Duran, you're right, Duran was probably the greatest lightweight of all time.
But let me
share this with you.
Go ahead.
Ray never would have lost to Duran had he not tried to prove something in that first fight. I don't know if you remember, but ask your friend Boykin. Everybody was saying he couldn't punch with Duran, he couldn't do this, he couldn't do that. So what he decided to do in that first fight was go in the ring and fight Duran's fight.
Well, Chuck, there's two things to that fight, too. No, there's two things to that fight. First of all, we forget that Duran wasn't 100% that fight. I remember the great line that they came up with about the fact that Duran had some sort of heart problem. And the legendary Ray Cosell, his great line was, heart problem? He said, Duran doesn't have a heart. I think he'd have no heart
that's
problem.
Right. Yeah,
and then
that's
the other problem was that Duran had a cold. Duran
that's a bunch of garbage. You know, Doc, I'm going to tell you
Chuck.
Yeah.
It's a doctor.
I'm sorry.
Okay? All right. Duran.
Like this, Doc.
The same
Chuck,
thing to me,
hey, Chuck,
don't worry.
Hey, Chuck, it's
Duran. When he hit Ray Leonard in the second round, he said he couldn't pursue it because he wasn't 100%. He didn't want to expound himself. But when you talk about Ray Leonard, Chuck, you talk about a guy who beat every great fighter of his era. He beat Hagler. He beat Hearns. He beat Duran, and people forget he won his first title against another great fighter, Wilfred Benitez.
When you talk about Ray Leonard,
you're right. I mean, and people, they talk about the Hagler Leonard fight. And I said, well, first of all, you know, here's a guy who hadn't fought in 4 years. And he comes out of retirement because when Duran lost to Hagler, he went over to ringside and told Ray, Ray, you can beat this guy. And, but people say this. I said, you know, if Hagler was the best fighter in the world pound for pound, the fight never should have went the distance. You know what I mean? If he was all that, it never should have went the distance. The fact that it went the distance, I mean, you know, Ray Leonard was just a great, great fighter. You know, a lot of guys in like
Yeah, but you
Ray.
Can't take anything away from Duran either. Because remember, like, you and I were talking, when he fought Hearns, he got knocked down in the second round. And you said he got right back up like no problem.
Well, the last great Duran we saw a semblance of him when he fought Ray. But as a lightweight, that's when when he came up, he was no longer at his very best. But as a lightweight, he was just a monster. Cedric, you still here? CC Wings is here. Hoopster, real quickly, want to come to you. You got to ask Chuck a question. What's the latest with this basketball stuff, Hoopster?
I'm sorry? Basketball? Brian Shaw is now assistant coach for the Indiana Pacers. Kobe's not going to be happy about that. And also, your good friend, Shaquille O'Neal, is going to be with the TNT cast now.
Really? He's going to be there with Barkley and all of them, too?
Yeah, but I think Weber's going to be out of there.
Really?
Yep.
Weber's leaving?
Hey, Doc, can I say something to Hoopster?
Yeah, sure. How you doing?
Hey, Hoopster, how you doing, buddy?
Okay,
you're a basketball guy. Let me tell you something. I was the PA announcer for the Chaminade, Virginia game when Ralph Sampson was a senior.
Wow.
You remember that game?
Yeah.
Little school in Hawaii that beat Virginia was an NAIA school at the time.
Yeah, I remember that.
Well,
yeah.
I did the PA for that. And then the same Chaminade team beat Louisville, Denny Crum's team, 2 years in a row, and then SMU when John Konkak was the center.
John Konkak.
Right.
He's taking it back.
I'm telling you. And I was the PA announcer for all those games. And I was the PA announcer for the Maui Invitational. I told Jack Powers that today for 18 years, the first 18 years of the Maui Invitational, which is the best preseason tournament in college basketball. I did the PA on ESPN for 18 years.
Wow.
Hey, Doc, my apologies to you. Let me tell you. My apologies to you. You know what my problem is?
What?
I had my own radio show called Ringside with Chuck Williams in Hawaii for a couple of years.
Oh.
I thought it was my show.
There's no need to apologize. Hey, Chuck, it is your show. You don't worry about it. Now, when are you leaving town? Can we get you back with us maybe real soon?
Yeah, sure. Even when I'm in Hawaii, you can call. We're 6 hours behind you in Hawaii. So when it's 10 o'clock at night in New York, it's 4 in the afternoon in Hawaii.
Oh, so we got to get him on the Sunday show, one of these shows, Doc.
Well, it looks like this Sunday. Now, when do you leave town, Chuck?
I'm leaving Tuesday.
Tuesday, okay.
Next Tuesday.
Yeah, I'm going to Vegas, as I said, for that fight.
Okay,
the press conference is Thursday next week for the fight. And then, by the way, that's a hell of a fight. Any of your boxing fans listening are crazy if they don't watch the Amir Khan, Zab Judah, because Zab Judah's been rejuvenated.
Oh, yeah.
And he's for real. He's a great young guy.
What I like about him, too, Chuck? Very approachable. You know, very approachable and a gentleman, a true gentleman.
Yeah, and he's threw away some of that thug image that some of these guys, especially some of these young guys from Brooklyn, like to carry around. He's become a man. He's a family man.
Mm-hmm.
And I helped coordinate a Night of Champions in Cardiff, Wales last year. And Zab and Jesse James Lehar are some of the people that were there. And they were just all great with the fans.
Well, yeah, he's another one, Lehar. Like remember at the Hall of Fame?
Covering all athletes, boxers are the best.
They are.
Oh. They're always humble. Hey, champ, you got a minute. You know, they always have time for order. And the greatest of them all is Ali. But, I mean, a fighter always has time for an autograph, has time for his fans, has time for they're the best of all the athletes. And it's just something that, it's just part of the makeup that they have. And you look at the classic guys, champ, you got a minute. Even if champ, you got a second, Arturo Gatti. I see him so many times. His manager, we got to go, no, hold on. I got this. And we're talking, Gatti talking to the Hispanic press or African-American press. You know, I remember the great line that the former New York City sports writer, and he worked for the Times, and he also worked for the News, Michael Katz. And he said about Ali, he said, Ali treats the guy from the high school newspaper the same way he treats the guy from the New York Times.
That
you
means
know,
a
Ali,
lot. That means a lot.
It tells you how Ali is really quick. Anybody with a quick question to Chuck here in the last few minutes?
Chuck, today, if the Ali of back then was to fight today against Mike Tyson at his prime, who would you take in that fight?
Ali and Tyson?
Ali with Tyson?
If Ali backed up Tyson, he would win. But if he allowed Tyson to come forward, the only way Tyson would win is if he landed the big punch. That's the only way he would win. So Ali was smarter and had a bigger heart than a lot of these guys that Tyson beat. So I think that Ali would recognize, look, if I'm fighting a big guy in the street, I'm not going to let him come forward to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm taking it to him. You've got to take it to him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what Ali would have done.
Well, who would you take, Chuck, in a Joe Frazier, Mike Tyson fight?
Well, I'll tell you what. That's a fight. David Tua was the guy I wanted to see Tyson fight. Remember David Tua?
Yeah.
All right, because they were in their primes at the same time. And that's the fight I wanted to see because that's a train wreck. Whichever one lands the big one first is going to win it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing with Joe Frazier. Although Tyson had a bigger punch than Frazier.
Mm.
Well, on a one-punch deal, on an accumulation of punches, Tyson was more of a one-punch knockout than Frazier. Think about the guys that Frazier hit with left hooks that he just had to keep throwing left hooks at him.
Yeah. You got a point. Joe beat you with accumulation. Mike could take you out with one. You know, all the energy. Oh, and now if they ever do the Pacquiao Mayweather, who would you see winning that, Chuck?
It's my standard answer to people because I'm asked it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You got to take Mayweather till somebody beats him. You got to take him until somebody beats him. And, you know, I was sitting there when he fought Mosley, and I was sitting with Ray Leonard. And Ray, about the fifth round, says to me, Chuck, that kid's for real, talking about Mayweather.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he came out of the womb a fighter.
Mm-hmm.
And his natural ability is just incredible. And he takes care of himself. You hear about him in nightclubs throwing $100 bills around, but you never hear him being drunk.
No, you know what, Chuck? Also, Doc and I had gone to the Victor Ortiz Mayweather press conference recently. What was that, Doc? Like last week or the week before? Something like that?
We got to rush it real quick. We got about a minute left.
But one of the things I was going to say is that I think that the overall consensus with the general public is that, you know, Mayweather has this arrogance about him, but yet off camera we were able to see something else. With Mayweather.
Yeah, he's a hell of a kid.
Really arrogant. Maybe it could be have confidence, but you got to take Mayweather to lose. Ladies and gentlemen, it's been a pleasure. And Chuck, we're going to have you back ASAP. And we want to thank everybody for listening.
Doc, thanks for having me.
Hey, the pleasure's been ours, all ours.
Hey,
Doc Stanley Sports
Up
on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Shoulders, the channel Sports Endeavor, the show. Chuck Williams has been our special guest. Chuck will be back. Hold tight. Okay, fans, come on. He'll be back. Larry Hardesty, tell everybody good night. Live your life today. If you stand before God tomorrow. Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul, the channel Sports in Depth of the show. Thank you, Mr. Williams.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, Chuck.
Good night.
This concludes another edition of Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. We thank you for listening and encouraging you to tell a friend about Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. You can hear that and many other great programs on the Blake Radio Network. Have a great day.
Adrian?
Yeah.
Yeah, you still there. Chuck was great. Give him a call. Tell him thanks. You know,
mm-hmm.
We did it, but we recorded the first half of the show, not the second half. But we'll have him back. And good for the cop. Rooney got a little upset there. He hung up on us.
Why?
Yeah, well, I had the first half hour live. I wanted to force focus on Chuck and then do what we did just now with the lights off.
Mm-hmm.
And the mic on, and everybody come at Chuck with the questions and stuff like that. Some
mm-hmm.
great story, man. But that's some great revelation, you know. That you know, and he said, "Hey, man, you got to go with Mayweather to the losers." That's just a great line. And
yeah,
great
absolutely.
Said that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, I still thought Williams won the fight, and I still thought, you know, people make that great line that Ray Leonard didn't fight his fight, and you know, evidently Duran must have made him not fight his fight.
Right.
Because you can't fault Duran that Ray fought in his hands, but there was, you know, Duran had some problems too. And the second fight, Duran had his training cut short a week,
right.
And you know that wasn't advantageous, even though everybody looked in great shape. But okay, listen, we'll have to get Chucky back.
Yeah. Now, what I was trying to get out of the document that I have pulled up for, you know, from Fight News, was just targeting and talking about the fact that, you know, we've seen so many controversies in boxing and we've seen so many fighters and whatever. I wanted to generally just ask him, now that this was actually something that happened and you had these three judges just being indefinitely suspended, what would be the process after this? You know, what we could do,
I'm going to fight tomorrow night. You still on vacation the rest of the week?
Yeah, no, actually, yeah, I am, but I go back on Tuesday, which Wednesday I'm going to try to see if
agent,
I can.
Agent, the rest of the week means from now to Sunday.
Yeah, I'm off.
Tell me Tuesday, you know, they're working you too hard here. Tuesday is not part of this week. Tuesday's past, but we still need this week. So I'm trying to say we'll get Chuck, and maybe we'll do something Saturday evening. I'll set some up and
Saturday
we'll bring it back Saturday
evening.
All
right.
Time.
Well, let's see how that plays out because you know I'm doing 100 million things this week.
Yeah. Well, then stop them.
Huh?
Find some time. Or maybe even tomorrow night. Maybe we'll do something.
That's
tomorrow.
Out of the question. Tomorrow night. I can't. Tomorrow.
Okay, so
Saturday's
good.
More. Saturday's more. Or Sunday.
Okay.
So
let's shoot right now. Let's shoot right now for about 1 o'clock Saturday. You know.
All right. Well, again, that's if he's available. I would have. You know. Hopefully.
Okay. Well, I'll talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I'll look. Maybe I'll set the show up for one. I'll see what kind of time slot we have, and I'll give us another. Maybe we'll do an hour this next time live. But good.
And I gotta say that was nice with Chuck to give you our invites. That was really nice.
Well, you
know what it is.
I mean, the guy. You know, and I tell Cedric and I talk about this all the time. Like when we go to these
then again,
places.
You know what? Chuck won't be back. He didn't invite the host to the show.
Right,
later for Chuck. hey, you know what? Hey, fuck Chuck.
Oh, stop.
Wow.
No.
What I was saying is that, you know, I think Cedric and I have talked about this before. You know, you see these people, they go to these things. They're not, you know, some of them are not as into boxing as I am and Cedric, you know, and then we know how to articulate ourselves.
A
lot of these people don't
know
how to act.
What,
they're
agent,
not professional.
I tell you what, agent, per se, boxing events, the people are usually into boxing. Boxing fans are the best fans in sports. They're the most knowledgeable fans. So usually your boxing crowd, you know, people are not there that are not into the game.
Mm-hmm.
Now you may have a more in-depth knowledge.
That's what I was trying to say.
Most
yeah.
of them.
Mm-hmm.
And you may have a higher appreciation, but anybody there in boxing has some sort of like and some sort of acknowledgement and some sort of appreciation of the sweet science. Boxing fans are the most intelligent fans, and in those kind of venues, people are not there if they don't want to be there. You know, because even with the Hall of Fame, it's not so much the autographs, it is to see the guys that they're getting the autographs from.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So that's the thing there. All right, gang, I'm going to run. We'll talk later, and we'll come back on Saturday.
Okay. All right, we'll shoot for Saturday.
Okay, thank you,
gang.
Thank
all
you.
All right, no problem.
Okay.
All right, bye.
All right, bye.